This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can grab off our website over at progressive.org. It's a real pleasure for me to have in the studio today again Will Durst, the best political comic in the country.
What do you mean today again?
Well, you've been on the show before.
I've been on the show, but I haven't been in the studio.
We've been in a different studio. We were at a fancier place last time we were in town. Rugs. What? Oriental rugs, don't you remember?
There's rug. That's a rug.
It's not Oriental rug.
No, you're right.
What is that? A gray plaid rug.
It's an Adia rug.
I had pants that looked like that a while ago. They were fashionable.
That's frightening.
Anyway, Durst is a stand-up comic, tours around the country. He's been on TV 400 times in 14 countries. He's got a new book out called The All-American Sport of Bipartisan Bashing, subtitle Common Sense Rantings from a Raging Moderate. Will Durst, welcome back to Progressive Radio.
Well, thanks for having me. Raging Moderate. I like that because it always freaks people out. That's the book was originally be called Raging Moderate because I thought it was funny. You know, it's like an oxymoron. Yeah. But then we got this title.
So, well, the title is a bit misleading in my opinion because while you do, you take a couple swings at Nancy Pelosi and Sheryl Crow. You swerved out of the way to run over Sheryl Crow.
She wants everybody in America restricted to one square of toilet paper per bathroom visit. All right, lady, but you're doing my laundry, okay?
Did she really say that?
She said that.
Oh, God.
I know.
How'd you get into this crazy comedy business, Will?
I started out University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I was involved in theater, journalism, and film. Never really graduated. I just kept bouncing back between those particular fields of study, and I always wanted to be a stand-up, but I didn't know how to do it. You know, I mean, there were no schools. So my one of my theater teachers, Herb Felsenfeld, and this was back in the, you know, I always say that, I grew up in the 60s. Well, not really. I grew up in Milwaukee. We didn't get the 60s till 1974. And this was right around that time. And we called him Herbal Felsenfeld because he was one of these, you know, teachers who, you know, breathe through your butt and stuff like that. And he had this project, and it was a performance project. So I darkened the windows in the room and bought a case of beer and cold Pabst Long Necks and brought those little ashtrays out from the student union, turned it into the classroom, into a comedy club, and did a 7-minute routine. And I did well. You know, of course, I got an A in the class, but then I hit a 7-minute routine because I had written it. And I was writing for the local underground newspaper and the UWM Post and stuff. So I took all my humor columns. And then I had a bit, and then I was, once you have 7 minutes, then I kept going on stage, and that 7 became 10, and that 10 became 15, and boom. And comedy, it just got in my blood.
And you got that buzz from getting reaction from the audience, I take it.
It's an immediate, there is, like, sometimes you do radio, like we're doing radio right now. And we don't know if the audience is paying attention, or if we say something to offend somebody, and unless they make the extreme effort of calling up and saying, I thought that, and that's 1 in 100 listeners, you know, tops will do that. But comedy, man, it's instantaneous. They always say that comedy is a monologue. It's not, it's a dialogue.
Now, I heard once that if you tell a joke and it bombs the first night, and you tell it once more and it bombs, you give it up. Do you ever use jokes that don't work a couple times and work the third time?
You know, I have routines or lines. I have lines. I know it's funny, and I will work on that line and work on that line and work on that line. For instance, I had a line about George Bush, that he's a Wheel of Fortune president in a Jeopardy world. And I love that line. And I don't know, I couldn't sell it. I could not sell it. I could not get an audience to laugh at it. And I think what I was doing was I was rushing it, and that they didn't get Wheel of Fortune president. And I was saying Wheel of Fortune president. And what I have to say is encapsulate Wheel of Fortune and then go president in a Jeopardy world. Because so I knew that joke was funny. So I just beat the audience over the head until I learned the timing on it. Yeah.
How many times did it take you on stage to get that one to work?
I think maybe 15, 20 times.
So you don't buy that theory. You got a junk.
Well, no, I gave it up because I thought it wasn't working. And then I know this is funny. So I would bring it back and it wouldn't work. And so I would give it up again and bring it back, you know. And there's a couple lines about Obama right now. Sometimes you're ahead of the audience, that you write stuff that the audience doesn't think is funny yet.
So what do you got going on Obama?
Well, I try to deal with the race thing, which last night we had a reading. And I was at a reading and I was explaining to the audience how tough it is, you know, for me, a white semi-liberal, talking in front of white liberal audiences to do jokes about Obama, because you bring up the race thing and their sphincters tighten up like the lug nuts on a 57 F-250 that's been submerged for 2 years. And it happened last night. So what you have to do is you have to wait and until people become comfortable with it. And I think it's going to take a lot of black comics, you know. And I think if he gets elected, which I'm not sure he can be, because this is America after all, but it would take 6 months until I could say president, homie.
This is America after all. What do you mean by that? Why is the race factor going to be so big that white people aren't going to vote for him in sufficient numbers?
That's my guess. That's my fear. That's my... I don't know. Maybe America is more mature than I give them credit for. But I think that a lot of it, it's not all racist. Some of it's just racial, you know. So like some of it was sexual, not sexist. Some of the antipathy towards Hillary.
Or is this the distinction you're drawing between people who are conscious racist, Klans people, or avowed racists, and people who are racist in a way that they're just kind of not quite comfortable with a black guy voting for a black guy?
It's not comfortable. I'm a white guy. I'm going to vote for the white guy. That's not always racist. That's me rooting for my own team. You know, I mean, there. You know, it's like a Wisconsinite. You know, you root for the Packers, even if you're not in Wisconsin or you haven't lived in Wisconsin. You know, it a lot of times it's just misplaced loyalties. But how do you say that's misplaced? If you went to Madison and you're a Badger fan, you know, I mean, so that's
you know, I am worried about this because I talked with a group in rural Wisconsin one night. I was supposed to give a talk on civil liberties, and I was at the table as a fundraiser for a public library. It was a self-selected, pretty liberal group, and there were three elderly white women and who had done great work in the community forever and a day, and two of them said, "We've always voted Democrat. We're not voting. We can't vote for Obama." And I asked why, and the first thing out of one of their mouths was, "Oh, race has got nothing to do with it."
Right.
It's a bit and of as a soon tell
as they say
the
race
poker.
Has nothing to do with it, yeah. Yeah, that means it's all about race. It's like whatever they say, it's not about the money. That means it's about the money. Yeah.
McCain, how are you able to deal with McCain? You've made a lot of jokes about his age. Is there? Did you get in trouble for that?
I actually say that his age, I think, is a benefit, because when history starts repeating itself, he'll be the first to know and he'll be able to alert us. His age, of course, is going to be a wedge for us comedians and editorial cartoonists and writers to get in there until we know more about his specific policies. And it's not us knowing about his specific policies. It's the audience understanding what he stands for. And right now, he's just a maverick. You know, that's all we know is that, you know, he's gone against...
Is that legitimate or is that crap?
The fact that he's a maverick? No, I mean, he's actually, you know, was a butt burr in the saddle of the Republican Party for a while. I mean, you got to give him credit for standing up against his party, which is, you know, and he's kind of semi-forward, you know, on environmental issues and a couple of issues.
So this idea that he's just, you know, Bush third term, you're not buying it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, economically, yeah. I mean, there's one or two tiny issues, you know, where he's progressive, which means that, you know, he's to the left of Pol Pot or something, yeah. Or James F. Sensenbrenner Jr., our congressman from Waukesha, where I'm originally from, but who's a little to the right of Pol Pot. So it's good that he's, but he sold this, and the press loves him.
And have you ever met him, by the way?
I shook his hand, that's all. Haven't met Barack. I met Hillary.
What was Hillary like?
She was very gracious. You know, they all are. You meet these politicians. You met them, right? And you never met Hillary.
I saw McCain once. I just stayed in my cubbyhole in Madison, Wisconsin. Pontificate, you know.
Well, Bill, I met Bill, and he stares you in the eyes, and he encompasses you in that big bear kind of a, and that thing where, you know, they always say about Bill Clinton that when you talk to him, you're the only one in the room, and he's, you know, just grabs you with that laser vision and pulls you into his
he's a master used car salesman.
Oh, God, he's good. You know, I'd screw him. Oh, man. Are you kidding? Yeah, I can understand, you know, the whole Monica thing. But I feel, and I wonder if Barack has that same kind of charisma. I think he's got a different kind of charisma. So I don't know if it's going to translate.
Is it too cerebral?
I think it might be. You know, which is in America. Oh, no, he reads. Oh, geez, you can't elect him. You know, because America wants a guy that they can have a beer with. And you look at the last two elections, and I know I should be being funny, but the last two elections, presidential elections, the guy that the press liked more won both times. For some reason, the press didn't like Al Gore. I don't know why.
They grew up with him, and they thought he was a prince of a congressman's son, I think.
Well, so was Bush.
Right.
But Bush, you know, adopted this faux kind of, you know, good old stupid boy. You know, let's go out and have a beer with him. You know, yeah, but now it's time to take away the car keys, people. And the same thing. And John Kerry, the same thing. I mean, they just made up, they didn't make up stuff. It was the right wing that made up the stuff, but the press would just echo it. I mean, the thing about Al Gore, he never, ever, ever said that he invented the internet. He said he helped fund it when he was a congressman, which he did. And he was the role model for Eric Segal's love story. I mean, Eric Segal said that. And then, you know, the press hated him. And if you, I met Gore a couple of times. There's a political comic who actually is the third roommate. Everybody knows that Tommy Lee Jones was Al Gore's roommate. Well, there's a one of the smartest, funniest guys you'd never heard of named Bob Summerby. And he runs a great website called Daily Howler, HOWLER.com. And what he does is he follows the pundits. So he will, you know, when a pundit says this, and then 2 weeks later the pundit does a 180, and no, he will, Bob will call him on it. But so
those guys have never been held responsible, either.
Never,
as pundits.
Ever. Never, ever. Novak, the Prince of Darkness, goes on TV and he says, well, I predict. And then it turns out, and they never cop.
It's unbelievable. My favorite is Fareed Zakaria, Newsweek. The guy said before the Iraq War that Bush has got to invent a pretext for the Iraq War. Now he's, you know, Mr. Critic of the Iraq War. Hey, you helped the president lie to the American people. Congratulations.
Don't give him a roadmap for crumbs. Don't give him.
My guest today is Will Durst. He's the author of The All-American Sport of Bipartisan Bashing. Will Durst is a columnist for the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive. Talk to me more, Will, about Bush and what he's done to this country.
What he's done to this country is he sold us down the river. He threw $3 trillion into a rat hole. And I understand what he was trying to do. He thinks that he and his oil buddies, I mean, he's a Texas oil man. His father is a Texas oil man. His vice president is a Wyoming oil man who shoots Texas lawyers. So, I mean, you got to give him credit for that. But these guys are all oil men. So the fact that we went into this, you know, we understand why we're there. Nobody thinks they're the bad guy. They didn't go in there for pure greed. They also went in there thinking that, no, they thought that they could stabilize and plant the seed of democracy and that they would have a base because it's going to be a very tenuous area for a long, long time and the richest area, and they wanted a base there. And Qatar was not cutting it, and our little good friends in Saudi Arabia were not giving us any room to move there. So And also, this guy tried to kill his daddy. So, I mean, there's a little bit of Texas revenge. There are so many. And also, the whole Grover Norquist, you know, starve the baby, starve the government. That's why, oh, you know, we got to have cuts here, cuts there. Why? Because we threw $3 trillion away. And so there's so many reasons why we went over there. And not all of them were evil. I mean, trying to plant democracy, give these people a chance. I really believe that there was a little bit of that in there. But, you know, ancient sectarian hatreds going back centuries. They're fighting. The Sunnis and the Shiites are killing each other based on what happened in the year 634, whether or not Muhammad's son-in-law was his true successor. That's why they're killing each other now. I mean, it's a custody battle. You don't get in the middle of those.
You've got a riff in your book, Will Durst, books called The All-American Sport of Bipartisan Bashing. I want royalties on these sales.
You should get them.
You've got a little riff on impeachment. Do you want to give that a whirl?
The deal is that I talk about Bush and how the last 7 years have been very good for me. But this election upcoming is so important. And I explained to the audience, and this is, it's written in the book, and it started, the germ of it started in the book, but now it's become a performance piece. And I said to the audience, I am so sick and tired of these lying, thieving, holier-than-thou, right-wing, cruel, crude, rude, coarse, crass, cocky, corrupt, criminal, crooked, dishonest, dissolute, degenerate, debauched, delusional, jingoistic, homophobic, xenophobic, xylophonic, racist, sexist, ageist, fascist, cashist, arrogant, ignorant, inept, inbred, insipid, illicit, insolent, impotent, incompetent, incontinent, insufferable, pompous, gutless, spineless, shameless, noxious, poisonous, avaricious, malicious, merciless, graceless, tactless, brutal, brutish, spiteful, vengeful, persistent vegetative state grandstanding, nuclear option threatening, irony deprived, depraved, erectile, dysfunctional, preemptory invading of a country that had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11, 35-day vacation taking, greedy exponential factor 15, domestic spying, CIA outing, constitution shredding, medical marijuana, busting, bicycle, falling, brush, clearing, monkey face, pretzel choking, hunchback, smirking, draft dodging, Muslim baiting, hurricane disregarding, oil company filleting, your hand under a rock, the maggoty remains of marsupial, just won't get off the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge drilling, two-faced, lawyer shooting, voting machine tampering, sociopathic, psychopathic, consensus-pathic, partisan-pathic, pathic, pathic, air and ground and water and media polluting, which is pretty much all the polluting you can get. Vile, venal, vulgar, venomous, villainous, vomitous, vituperative, virulent, mephitic, bloodthirsty, yellow belly, edible, not edible, evil, not sure if I said evil, want to make damn sure I say evil, greatness, fool, toad, butt wipe, lizard stick, corporate, imperialistic lackey, slime bucket tools of the Bush administration that I could just spit. Impeachment? Hell no. Impalement upon the swift and righteous sword of the people's justice. Screw the sword. Make it a curtain rod, because it'll hurt more.
That's Will Durst giving his impalement, not impeachment, rant from his All-American Sport of Bipartisan Bashing.
I also caught the drum solo when I because it ends my act when I perform, and it's got a sell-by date of January 21st, 2009, which means I only have, what, 207 days left?
It's going to break your heart to retire that one.
Oh, man, it's going to kill me.
What happens in an audience that is not self-selected anti-Bush audience when you do that?
I save that for audiences that I know are not going to. See, I'm not, I don't, my job as a stand-up comic is different than my job as a writer. My job as a writer is to influence opinion. My job as a stand-up comic is to elicit a motor response of involuntary laughter. And whether or not I, because that's how I get paid, You know, I'm not out there to change the way anybody's going to think. And I so enjoy getting a laugh on stage that I've become a slave to that. I really am.
What do you do about the humor deaf progressives or leftists in your
audience? Oh, man.
How do you reach them?
Oh, man. What was that? The freedom, democracy, the freedom in they had that convention in San Francisco about 10 years ago. And it was in New York about 8. Remember that?
Media and reform,
media,
something like that.
Democracy and media convention. And I did a gig there, and it was, the leftists of the far left. And, oh, man, they hated me. They, because they're constantly pushing everything through the politically correct filter to see whether or not it's okay to laugh at. And by that time, comedy is so fragile that you've killed it. It's like crushing a butterfly, and I'm not saying that my jokes are the wings of the butterfly. I'm not saying that, some of them are pretty dumb and low, and I understand. But I have my biggest problems with the true believers, on the left and on the right, because they have no sense of humor. Of course, nobody thinks they have no sense of humor. Everybody thinks they get a sense of humor, but, I have problems on the left. Last night at the reading, there was a guy who, and we got into it, and he obviously didn't think I was, I compromised the truth too much, and so he did, we had a problem. And that always happens, It's not just the left, it's the right as well.
I imagine with some people on the left, you've had problems with your treatment of Ralph Nader. Talk to me about Ralph.
I get, one of my best friends from high school is a Green Party guy in Florida right now. And, man, we went over it and over and over because of Nader. And Nader just drives me nuts. He's running again. He's running again, for crumb's sake, Ralph. Shouldn't three strikes apply here? America can't get better till it gets worse. Ralph, it's worse. I don't want worser. This is as worse as I want. And they always say, the Nader people, they always say that there's no difference, and Nader says this himself, that there's no difference between, there's not a dime's worth of difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush. A dime's worth. And then on the first day that he was in office, January 21st, 2001, he signed, the first thing that George W. Bush did was signed an executive statement that outlawed any monies going to anybody who had a Planned Parenthood overseas that mentioned the word abortion. If you had a Planned Parenthood clinic in Lagos, Nigeria, you mentioned the word abortion, he cut off all government funds. He doomed thousands of African women to death and children to death because of one statement. The first thing that he did, and Ralph Nader says, there's not a dime's worth of difference. Bite me. I'm only saying bite me because what I want to say is a different verb and a different pronoun, but I can't because of the FCC. And if you pronounced FCC, that would be the verb.
I'm talking with Will Durst. He is a stand-up comic, the best political comic in the country. I sound like Wolf Blitzer now. Oh, my God. I'm going to take that back. Anyway, Durst is the author of
most trusted man in show business.
The best political team Matthew on TV. Rush. The All-American Sport of Bipartisan Bashing is the title here. You live in San Francisco. You're a Milwaukee kid in San Francisco.
They're a lot alike.
What's that like?
San Francisco and Milwaukee are a lot alike.
How so?
Both have four syllables? Four. Yeah, Milwaukee has three.
It's three versus four. You didn't pass that last math course at UWM.
I didn't work out that last analogy very well. Milwaukee's the 414 area code, and San Francisco's the 415.
So you've got Cindy Sheehan running against Nancy Pelosi out there. What's that like?
See, that's the problem with the left, is that they will eat their own. And I know what Cindy's doing. Cindy is holding the... She's trying to hold Nancy's feet to the fire, and well, she should, because Nancy should be holding some other people's feet to the fire. But I also understand what Nancy's doing. She's trying to get a consensus, and she didn't have the votes to override a veto, and she didn't want to ruin the chances in 08. I mean, this election, she wanted, the Democrats could win 20 more seats in Congress, in the House, and 5 or 6 more seats in the Senate. And she wanted it, and she didn't want to make an empty gesture, but I think America wanted an empty gesture. I think we wanted to hold their feet to the fire.
We wanted that impeachment instead of taking it off the
table.
But
that's the crazy part of San Francisco. Nancy Pelosi, you know, who's demonized and castigated around the country as being the soul of the left, she's not left enough in San Francisco. She's considered a moderate in San Francisco. And we got Code Pink and Medea Benjamin, and then we got Cindy Sheehan, and there was even somebody running, because Cindy's running on, I think, the Green Party in November against Nancy Pelosi. But Nancy Pelosi had a woman to the left of her run in the Democratic primary. So Nancy's, you know, and this woman ran ads on TV. They were very clever, funny ads, too. So Nancy is really taking her lumps in the city, but she's going to win with 80% of the vote.
We only have a couple minutes left.
Oh, sorry.
Will Durst. No.
It's been going on and on.
Not at all. George Carlin recently passed away. I don't know if you'd even like that euphemism. The guy died. Flat out.
Late. He ain't
over.
Coming.
I'm wondering what your take is on George Carlin.
He was a general in the war against hypocrisy. He was the guy who blazed, who had a huge machete, and he used his words as machete to blaze a path for the rest of us to stumble through the jungle. He was, I mean, you think of all the comedy conventions that he established. I mean, Jumbo Shrimp, military intelligence, he was the first guy. It's become a cliche now, and people forget who started that. There are so many things that he did, and what he did was he made his insurgency, and he made it popular. And that's why he wasn't held as a legend. You know, Lenny Bruce, who had a much shorter career. Lenny Bruce was like 56 or 66. You know, it was 10 years, and not all of it in the spotlight. And there was a story going around, and I'm not sure if it's true. I never got to ask him, that Carlin was studying Lenny Bruce so hard, and he could never get to meet him, that Lenny Bruce got busted one time at a club in New York, and Carlin kicked the cop so he would be put in the same squad car as Lenny Bruce. But you think of Carlin and all the mutations and how popular he was, and yet how subversive he was. People forget that, you know, and he was never a legend because he never flamed out. You know, he was always there. He was ubiquitous, and you know, we're gonna miss him.
My guest today has been Will Durst. Will Durst is a political comic. I don't know how he has the energy to travel around the country and overseas to do all the gigs that he's.
But it's an election year. This is my year. I'm like an Olympic athlete with a career every 4 years for a month.
You better cash out now.
Exactly.
You better farm
while the sunshine.
Farm now while you can. He's got a book out called "The All American Sport of Bipartisan Bashing." Subtitle is "Common Sense Rantings from a Raging Moderate." I hope you've enjoyed the rantings today, and I'll be back again next week. Thanks, Will Durst, for being my guest.
Thank you, Mr. Rester.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.